Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is a Tuesday, which means we get the opportunity to visit with our Chiefs insider, Dan Israel, joining us. As we start off hour number two, fast and furious here, we get a great Monday Night Football. Dan, we were opening with reactions to that as it pertains to the Chiefs. The Bills are, in fact, not gone. They are very much in the thick of things. The Bengals are struggling, but are a team that almost beat Kansas City. But as you look across the AFC landscape, Baltimore also sort of struggling out of the gates a little bit. I think it's been fortuitous for the Chiefs, who have been 3-0 despite a really difficult schedule to open things up.
Yeah, I was a little shocked at the Bengals game. I mean, 0-3, that's a tough start. You're getting into statistical, you know, not that you can, you know, stats are meant to be broken, right? But you're getting into a land where they're going to have a very hard time being anything but a wild card. And it's just the way it is. And then I thought the Commanders looked, you know, I just thought that was fascinating, man. So I normally don't like the two football games, but last night it turned into a worthy experiment. So, but the Bills seem to be the real deal, which is the concern, you know, if you're a Chiefs fan. They look like I really thought their window was closing on them, but not from what I saw last night, not from what I saw week one and two.
Dan, it was another skin of their teeth victory for Kansas City in primetime on Sunday night against the Falcons. I mean, a win is a win, and you look at the win-loss record and you kind of you know, try to forget about some of the things that have happened in all three of those games, to be completely honest. But Kansas City does pull out the victory against Atlanta. Offensively, just a lot of different things, I think, stood out. And really, for me, I think number one, the biggest thing is just the emergence of Rashee Rice as the legitimate wide receiver one on this team, with what he has developed with Patrick Mahomes and just overall his abilities. To me, and I don't know if you've noticed the same thing, to me, it looks like he is the number one guy on that depth chart.
Yeah, I think so, Tommy. I mean, third game with 75 yards or more. I mean, I just feel like, and honestly, I don't think that they're necessarily featuring him. I think they're trying to get the ball around, but in the progressions of reads that Mahomes has, I think Rice falls early in a lot of those. And so I think he's getting separation. There's the opening. Why not take it, right? So until somebody stops it, you keep doing it. And I just think he's getting better and better. His route running is getting better. If you watch him during warmups this year versus last year, he is so much more precise. And I just think all of that's coming together. The timing between him and Mahomes is, you know, gotten so much better, and it's fun to watch, man. I know we're still going to see more Xavier Worthy. We're going to see, you know, you saw Juju get into the end zone. And sooner or later, Kelsey will, you know, it's crazy that we're talking game week three here and no Kelsey, but I just feel like he has really emerged as that true number one, which is something that's been missing on the Chiefs since, you know, Tyreek Hill left.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at some point, teams are going to key on Rice, which will open up Kelsey, I think. I thought what was interesting, maybe the most, is that Isaiah Pacheco's out and the Chiefs were still able to play the exact brand they clearly wanted to play and have wanted to play so far this year, and that's running the ball. I mean, Steele, if you ask me, like, what's a best-case scenario, I would have said he carried the ball around 15 to 18 times, and he did. He was effective. They were able to drain the clock. Atlanta couldn't get on the field. Atlanta losing the two offensive linemen. I mean, we got to be real about what happened within the game. The Chiefs' defense looked great, but, man, once those two linemen went down, they didn't have a chance on offense. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't protect Cousins long enough for him to throw the ball. But the Chiefs in that scenario, what do you want to do, right? You want to just You want to just milk the clock, and that's what they've been able to do, whether it's Pacheco or now Carson Steele. That's their brand of football, and Steele lets them do it.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was interesting, Jacob, because this is a rookie, right? This is an undrafted free agent kind of situation. You're just going to lump the whole playbook on him and you sit him out there and put him in a full-time starting role? That's what it felt like. It goes to show how much, first of all, how much trust the coaches have in him. And second of all, how hard he's been working these past 3 or 4 months to get into that position where they could do something like that. Again, you know, we talked last week, I think, about how his and Isaiah Pacheco's running style, very similar. They're very, you know, downhill, kind of high knees and right over the middle kind of runners. But I think he's got a little more weight on him, a little more, you know, almost a fullback.
Yeah.
And yet the concern I had going into week three was how much of the playbook can he perform? You know, I mean, he can't take that many snaps. He can't know as much as Isaiah Pacheco. I guess I was wrong, because I thought they lumped they heaped a load on him, and he just lived up to it. And so I was really surprised by his performance.
So much has been made, Dan, over the last really couple of weeks, just about the lack of overall production from Travis Kelce through 3 weeks. For me, I don't really put a lot of stake into that, just because we know Travis Kelce and we know the kind of talent that he is and the connection that he and Mahomes have. I think more than anything, with Patrick Mahomes, and I think it's fair to say through 3 weeks, it hasn't been quite as like Mahomes-esque as we probably would expect it to be. I think that's a larger story than Travis Kelce not putting up gaudy numbers through 3 weeks. There have been a couple of careless mistakes, you know, that Mahomes has made, and I know from time to time that'll happen. You know, the interception on Sunday night, I watched it back a few times, and I'm like, man, that's not a pass that Mahomes typically would make, you know? And yeah. So I do you see any lingering concerns with that, or is it something that primarily you think he'll just be able to work through?
Well, with regards to just, you know, Mahomes' play in general, lingering concerns, I would say not yet, Tommy. I feel like Mahomes is having to kind of reinvent or how do I want to say that? He's having to understand what this new offense is about. I mean, because it's different than last year. It's certainly, I mean, you might go back to 2018, 2019 and say, well, it's similar to that. Yeah, yes and no. And so I feel like he's struggling a little bit just to kind of absorb it all. Instead of having one or two outlets, now he's got four, and he's got, you know, just a slew of options there of what they're trying to do. So not that it's overwhelming. I just think he's trying to kind of figure out how to work this offense. So I think if this lingers into mid-October, late October, then yeah. I mean, it's, you know, what's wrong with Mahomes kind of thing. But those, I always think it's interesting, you know, in training camp or preseason rather, coach encourages Mahomes to throw interceptions, meaning find the window, find the difference between an interception and an almost interception, and do that in preseason so that when you get into the game. So I think that's a little of what's going on here with that. You know, it's he's finding that window between squeaky close and oops, I shouldn't have thrown that. And Mahomes has been so stable with that over the years. When you think about how many passing yards he's thrown and how fewer interceptions he's thrown, it's a really good stat. So not worried yet. With regards to Kelce, I think it's just amazing that, you know, we've survived on Kelce being that outlet receiver, you know, that go-to guy. And now we got several go-to guys, and it's kind of overwhelming the you know, there you can't, not enough mouths to feed or not enough food to go around. And so I kind of wondered last week, you know, are they kind of not featuring Kelce to say, hey, go stop this, to open Kelce up? I don't know if that's the game plan, but that's effectively what's going to happen, right? As soon as they stop paying attention to Kelce and they move these guys to double team Rice or double team worthy, Kelsey's going to come alive again, I think.
I think it's game plan two. I don't think the Chiefs want to be the kind of offense I thought they were going to be. And I don't know if that's because Hollywood Brown hasn't played and now Isaiah, but they want to run the ball. They want to run the ball and just drain the clock. I mean, that's clearly their style right now. They're just not giving in to defenses that are intentionally not, and this is happening across the league. Nobody wants to give up big plays. And so the Chiefs are like, okay, fine. We'll just drain it out of you. And I think one of Mahomes' more underrated qualities is his adaptability. And I think right now his adaptability is saying, play this way. And it's, I don't know if the numbers are going to be there just based on the personnel they have on the field. So, I mean, you keep doing it, right? And I guess with Carson Steele, it allows you to. Do you see, after what we saw in the Atlanta game, knowing that the Chiefs are going to want to run the ball, do you see Kareem Hunt carving out a role, or do you think they feel good with what they saw out of P. Ryan and Steele?
Well, it's a great question. You know, I think Kareem Hunt at 29 still has miles on his, you know, still has tread on his tires. I don't know if it'll ever be what he had in his rookie season. I think, what did he have, 1,300 yards or something like that, his rookie season? He was very good. I don't know that Kareem Hunt is that Kareem Hunt, but I think there's a role for him. I think they'll continue, you know, with the trust they showed in week three on Carson Steele and the effectiveness that he had. I don't know that they'll change it. I do think it's interesting. You know, I mentioned this on pregame on Sunday. As of week two, there has been more rushing yards in the first 2 weeks of this season since any other season since the 70s. It's like all of a sudden there's this resurgence of rushing, you know. We thought we were all in love with the passing game, but and I think it's interesting that the Chiefs are doing that as well. You mentioned it. You know, we used to be, for years, we were pass the ball to run the ball. Now it's almost like we're back to that conventional run the ball, play action pass. And so, again, I think that all kind of goes to show how the team is reinventing itself offensively. And I do think the one nice thing about having Kareem Hunt in the mix is Kareem, if you look at Kareem's stats from Cleveland, while he didn't have a lot of yardage, he had a lot of touchdowns. So they put him in red zone situations, and I think that's an area that the Chiefs still struggle a little bit in, is those red zone situations. So maybe he'll become the Jerick McKinnon third down. He'll become the Jerick McKinnon in the red zone, get the touchdown, guy. Which, by the way, I'm not really sure why Jerick McKinnon isn't back on this team, but that's a whole nother question, I guess.
Well, really, Dan, the other offensive positional shakeup going into week three outside of running back was obviously left tackle. And so the decision was made by Andy Reid before the primetime matchup against the Falcons to start Wanye Morris instead of Sua Mataia. And it looks like that will probably be the case going into week four against the Chargers as well. Kingsley did rotate in and played, you know, a decent amount of snaps in the Falcons game on Sunday. What did you take away from seeing Wanye starting in that role? And do you anticipate it's going to go back and forth between those two as the season goes on? Or ideally, would they like to really have one guy be the starter as the season progresses?
I think ideally, like, they'd like to have one guy. I did talk to Coach a little about this because I was shocked that Wanye looked substantially better. And I wasn't sure whether that was the competition, fear, what that was. And Coach believes he just finally is healthy. He just thinks that he's been battling injury this whole time and he's finally healthy and able to do. He was really moving fast. His little kick step to the left, man, he was getting out there and setting, you know, that edge pretty well. And I hadn't seen that out of Wanye Morris. I think equally, and this didn't come from Coach, this is my assessment. I think with Kingsley Suamataia, I think we saw him get overwhelmed. I think that, you know, it was just too much for him. And so when they look at these two, I think they'd rather have Wanye in there and bring Kingsley along a little more slowly so that he can be more comfortable in that position and get in there and be more effective rather than be battling his mind and body. So that's my take on it. So I think you know, it's kind of at this point Wanye's job to lose. And we'll see how this week goes. I mean, the Chargers, you know, we can get into it, but the Chargers are, man, they're typical Chargers. They're banged up.
They always are banged up.
They've always been banged up
for the last decade.
It's a curse. I'm telling you.
It's just absolutely insane. I look at that, but I kind of look at the next two. You've got that one, and you got Monday Night Football against the Saints, who are obviously better than people thought. Wouldn't, if we didn't know anything about this year other than I told you coming in that Isaiah Pacheco and Hollywood Brown would be out, we'd be happy with 3-2 when you look at those first five games. I feel like it's a little bit of house money here against the Chargers and the Saints. You know, you thought when you looked that those would be two wins and maybe you had a couple losses, one or two in the other ones. Now you've got all three of those wins.
Yeah.
I think the Chiefs, I think they can just really let it rip in these next two games. Absolutely no pressure whatsoever in those two going into the bye week.
I mean, if you just look at the season and you take September, October, November, and December, and you say, okay, you're going to lose one game in each of those months, you're 13-4. You know, and so if you had said, Jacob, to me in August, what do you want to do in September? I probably would have said, you know, I'd really like to go 3-1. I'll settle for 2-2. And here we are 3-0 with a very real possibility of 4-0. So, yeah, house money. I agree. Do I think it's a trap game? No, because I just don't think the way coach is with the players, I think that is really difficult. He just wouldn't allow that kind of mentality. So I don't think that, but I do think, you know, it's a situation where, man, and let me just say for the record, it'd be nice to hear the words Carson Wentz coming in for Patrick Mahomes here, because these nail biters are killing me, man. But I'd love to see at least a clean game, you know, a really error-free game. Because I feel like the Chiefs are still making a lot of errors, and they're 3-0. They won three games, and they didn't play their best football.
They're fortunate to be 3-0. They're a toenail away from a Ravens loss. The Bengals feel like they should have won that game, and that was a blown call in the end zone against Atlanta. That was pass interference, clearly. And there were some phantom flags thrown, but you were never going to get a makeup call on that missed one. So not only is it – but you feel fortunate to be 3-0. You could be 0-3 in this. I mean, just like that in this, it's been that close. That's where Mahomes, I think, no matter what numbers he puts up, that's where you tip your cap to Mahomes. Like, he just wins a whole bunch more of those than he loses. But it's not like they've been a dominant 3-0.
No, agreed. And you know, I think we both looked at, or we all looked at the first two games of the season and said, you know, let's just split them, you know, let's just win one and we'll lose one. Okay. You know, are the Bengals as bad as 0-3 would suggest? I don't think so. I think they'll figure things out, but they certainly have their problems. But yeah, I think the Ravens was a fortunate game. I mean, they were able look if the you know had the things not had the had the guy gotten his toe in, they still had to go for a 2-point right. conversion. You know, had the call last night or Sunday been pass interference, they still would have had to get into the end zone and all that stuff, right?
And would have had to stop Mahomes, right?
Correct. And so I do think, you know, good teams find a way to win kind of vernacular is appropriate here. And you just have to throw in. And I've always said this, you know, that to get to a Super Bowl, there has to be just a certain amount of luck, whether it's injury free or blown calls or what have you. And so I hope we're not using all our luck up now, but yeah, being 3-0, sitting where we're sitting right now feels incredibly gracious from if you believe there's a script in the NFL, we appreciate being its protagonist.
Well, and on that note, Dan, I mean, I think that by any level of standard that every single player in that locker room has for themselves and for the team overall, I would have guessed that none of them would say that they've played a full and complete game through 3 weeks yet. I'm sure that none of them are. They're happy to be 3-0. They're happy with the wins, but I'm not sure that anybody's overly thrilled with the way that they've gotten to 3-0. Eventually, they're going to have to play a complete game and, you know, a really solid full game. In your mind, is that just trying to eliminate as many of the mistakes as possible?
Yeah, and I think you're exactly right. I mean, as someone who's in the locker room before the media gets in there, I see what the players are, how they're reacting and acting, and I see what they're talking about. And I always think it's interesting. You go, like, I think it was the Bengals game. I walked into the locker room, and guys were happy, but they were talking about moments of the game, like what happened here and this and that. They weren't going, you know, they weren't smoking cigars and saying, you know, we rock, man, we're the world champions. And I think it's a really good mindset. When you think you can improve, you know, the first ability to improving is believing that you have room to improve. And so I really admire the way they're approaching this. They know they're fortunate too. And they know they can play better, and they're dedicated to eliminating those mistakes. Man, you know, just some of the timely penalties, and I think much like we were talking about with Mahomes and interceptions, I think McDuffie and pass interference is kind of that same deal. It's such a fine line, and he's really trying to figure out where that is. Man, he makes some spectacular plays. And then there's times also I think, heck, give me the pass interference. You know, I'm fine with that. I mean, that's not, they still have to do this or they still have to do that. So, but I think these, as the season goes, the one thing we want to see, and I think the one thing we will see is those, the elimination of these small errors and mistakes.
Yeah, it doesn't get any easier the way the Chargers are playing, injuries or not. They're clearly a better football team than they have been. That's a 3:25 kick. It's the late afternoon window with all eyes there on Harbaugh and Mahomes. It'll be a good one. The first game of this series with Harbaugh there, Dan, and you guys will be there and people will hear it right on the Chiefs Radio Network over on KNSS. We're pumped for it.
Yeah, I am too. You know, Chargers is always an interesting game because it feels half home game. There's just,
right.
You can't get people out there. And as we mentioned, you know, the Chargers are so banged up, you know, the loss of, you know, you got Derwin James out, you got Herbert, who's may or may not play. If he plays, he's going to play with a high ankle sprain. You got Joey Bosa with a hip, the left and right tackle, injured. It smells like a game that we should be able to go out and play Chiefs football and win. And with the Chargers, when I looked at this schedule, I said, you know, who could we possibly lose to here? Chargers, I figured we might drop one of the two games to the Chargers. And so if we can get a W here, then we can deal with the Chargers on the back end of the season as well. But one thing's for sure, it's going to be an exciting game because I just think that's the era of football, Chiefs football, that we're in right now.
And somebody will be able to handle those running backs the ball about 40 times in that game, I think, for L.A. All right, Dan, well, we'll hear it. Pre-game coverage, the full thing right here on the Chiefs Radio Network. We appreciate it. We'll see if we can go for 4-0.
I like it. Have a good Tuesday, guys. Go Chiefs.
There goes Dan Israel. Man, it's been a wild season. Let's talk about the Mahomes things you brought up there, Tommy, when we come back. I think it's been interesting. You look at, you know, quarterback rating and all those things. He's way down the list, but it just feels like he's always in control, right where they need to be, even if he's struggling. We'll get into that dynamic when we return at Sports Daily. It's all Brockton Caster. Your calls welcome on the IHOP hotline at 869-1240. By the way, we've been talking a lot of baseball on the show as we get ready for the Royals. All the baseball coverage here on KFH brought to you by T-Mobile. Head to T-Mobile.com and you can get a great deal on the iPhone 16 Pro. There you go. We'll come back. We'll talk Mahomes when we return on Sports Daily. portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. This week's chef special, the chicken parm. Chicken parmesan. I got a flatbread of the week, grilled steak mozzarella. Every Wednesday, fried chicken night. We appreciate Crestview's support of the program. Yeah, you got the golf, you got the tennis, you got the great facilities, you got a great restaurant too, a great bar right there. Access to it all. Give Crestview a call. Tell them we sent you from Sports Daily. We appreciate their support. All right, Tommy. Patrick Mahomes. Glad you brought it up. I think he looks fine. I mean, the interceptions aren't good. I think he's being forced to press slightly. I think we're seeing – I think the lack of Hollywood Brown has impacted the team pretty clearly. But he's doing exactly enough for them to be where they want to be. I just – you know, I was wrong. I thought they wanted to be high-flying this year, and maybe they would have with Hollywood Brown, although I find it hard to believe just the lack of that one player has done that, but maybe. That's just not their style, and it feels like one of those Brady years where he's going to do whatever they need to win, stats be damned, and he just, when the big plays need to be made, he makes them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that part of it is I think Mahomes is a victim of his own expectations and our expectations right. of him
sure.
a little bit. I mean, you go back to, you know, the way historically he's played in the month of September in his career. You know, he's been really, really good over the course of his career. And that's not just wins and losses. I mean, that's just his own stat line as well. That being said, I mean, there are some things through three games that I don't even want to use the word concerning. They're just things that make me notice it a little bit. It stands out to me slightly. Things like his QBR, his adjusted net yards per attempt. Those are both career lows so far through three games that we haven't really seen from him in previous seasons. His interception percentage is higher than his career average through the first three games of the season. So those are all things, again, I think that's why I wanted to get Dan's take on that. Like, are there lingering concerns about him? I'm not overly concerned. They are just things that make you, I think it makes you pay attention a little bit more, knowing that, yeah, despite the fact that they're 3-0, it hasn't been, you know, all these bells and whistles for Mahomes through the first three games. And on top of that, remember going into the season, and I know that things have changed with injuries and all of that, but going into the season, the major storyline, and this was something that you were huge on going into the year, was that he was going to have a phenomenal individual right. stat line throughout the course of the year. That hasn't happened so far. No. Doesn't mean that it can't, but at least it hasn't happened so far.
I don't think it's going to. I think it was wrong about that. I think for a couple of reasons. A, the injuries, they haven't been, you know, until that Atlanta game, they haven't been particularly good protecting Mahomes on the left side, which you have to have for reasons I'm not probably smart enough to understand. Worthy over the top has not been a thing at all this year, like we probably thought it would. He's been more of a get him the ball and let him do his damage after the fact. And then, you know, losing Hollywood Brown certainly has a factor too. But even with all of those things, I don't think that's the identity that the Chiefs wanted. A part of the reason I thought they'd be so high flying is I didn't think their defense would be as good as it was a year ago. It probably has been as good up to this point, you know, and maybe not quite as dominant, but it's been as good as you could have hoped for. And I think that has a factor too. I think as their defense continues to be a strength, they want to run the ball. They want to play this style of offense. And Mahomes is perfectly willing and capable of doing that too. We've seen it. You know, this is the reaction to the Tampa Bay loss in the Super Bowl. It's that kind of offense again, where teams, and now again, we talk about this all the time. That was sort of the blueprint that started this entire thing with defenses playing this way. And I think the Chiefs are just saying, look, you can play however you want. We'll beat you the other way. You want to take away the game over the top for us? That works for us. We'll just run the ball and do this short to intermediate stuff, and we'll bleed the clock out and play. Basically, it feels like the game plan is to make sure Mahomes has the ball at the end of the game to go win the game. And at that point, Mahomes is Mahomes, right? That's what he does.
That might be the game plan. That didn't happen in primetime on Sunday.
Well,
because keep in mind, it was a three and out. Atlanta, it was a three and out for the Chiefs. late in that game, and they gave the ball right back to Atlanta, who had a chance to go and score.
And
take the lead.
But it would. But what I'm saying is, the game plan was if Atlanta gets the call, they should have gotten the end zone and scores there. Then that's what you would have had, right? And it feels like the Chiefs are totally fine playing football that way this year. They trust their defense just like they did a year ago. The big question was, do they trust the run game the way they did? And they do, clearly. They just turned around and handed Carson Steele the ball 17 times. And he did great. Like, he was fine. I mean, it's credit to the interior offensive line. There are a lot of players that will have success running up the middle for the Chiefs for what they want them to do. It's just interesting with Mahomes, because I think they are perfectly willing to play this way. What did he throw the ball? 40 times in that game? 39 times? So it's not like they're not throwing the ball. They're just not stretching the field, because defenses are playing that way. And they're fine doing it. They don't have a problem. Are the interceptions a little rich for me? Of course they are. 5 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. That's not good enough. And that's been a problem. There's no sugarcoating that. But everything else, I don't have a problem with it at all. I don't have a problem with Kelsey's usage and how many targets he's getting, because the Chiefs are just taking what a defense gives them, and they're beating a defense however it is it wants to play.
Rashee Rice has absolutely established himself as the wide receiver.
Yeah, he's a stud.
That's great. It's wonderful. I'm not sure that I want to see him catching the ball 12 times in a game, because, you know, I'm sure that defenses are, already game planning. Like, hey, we've got to try to take him away, bracket him, do whatever we need to do, to keep him from catching the ball 12 times and burning you. Now, of course, there are other weapons. There's Worthy and there's Kelsey and there's all of that, to be able to go to. I think that it was good for me. I really liked seeing, even in a small way, I really liked seeing Juju get involved in the game. He had a touchdown catch against the Falcons. And that's the thing. And I'd forgotten about that. I had forgotten about how, and I'm just going to use the word elite, of a blocker Juju Smith-Schuster is. He's fantastic. And I had forgotten about that when he was in Kansas City a couple of years ago. And I think it's because they needed him to be the prime pass catcher. And now they don't necessarily. So he can show off those skills in pass blocking. And it was phenomenal. And so I think that that's something that they're going to need to lean into. It was great to see him on the field and to contribute in those ways. So that's helpful. I'd like to see just a little bit more distribution, getting Worthy more involved, getting Kelsey more involved. And I think those things will come. But at the end of the day, too, I think we need to continue to get used to seeing defenses sitting back. We need to get used to seeing short and intermediate passes. That's going to be the identity, not necessarily because it's what they prefer to do, but it's because they're trying to take what the defenses are giving them.
So keep in mind, last year when Rice really established himself, that didn't happen until like late Thanksgiving, right? It was the Raiders game on November 26th. I'm just looking at his game log. He didn't get that just insane like target share until then. He had a couple of moments where he'd have like 7 targets in a game, but more often than not, it was somewhere between 3 and 5. So it takes a long time. We hear about this all the time. It takes a really long time for rookie receivers to get adjusted to the Chiefs offense. We haven't seen enough of Worthy yet. I think there's still a more than 50-50 chance he is a much bigger part of this offense by the time this season ends. Right now, it's just how many opportunities can they get him in space to make a play? I think that's all they're trying to do. I'd love to see them take a couple of shots, but if defenses aren't letting you do that, then what are you going to do, right? Like, if they're going to play defense that way, I mean, you can't just throw it into coverage when you don't need to, especially. And I'm fine with it. I'm fine with the way everything has gone. Even if they didn't win these games the way that they are, I think that it's just very different than I thought, but I'm totally okay with the way the offense has looked so far. The interceptions, that could go ahead and stop now.
Yeah,
but other than that, everything's been okay.
I'm not going to go quite that far, because they've not been good at all in red zone offense. The number of times, of times that they've been in the red zone and they've settled for field goals, or they've turned the ball over. Mahomes had a red zone interception on Sunday night. That was his one pick. That's an issue. And so, yeah, by and large, with the way that they've ridden the running game, and honestly, I don't believe that they can just continue with Steele and P. Ryan. I know they brought up Ingram to the active roster for Sunday night's game. I think we'll probably see Kareem Hunt on the active roster. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, it sounds like from the broadcast, the Chiefs are optimistic he'll be returning in week 5. I don't know how big of an impact he'll make. Probably not a whole lot at all, but they were fine. I mean, Steele and P. Ryan were fine, and I liked their involvement in the passing game out of the backfield a little bit. That was nice too. It was fine overall. The passing game is middle of the road. Everything's okay for the most part. Rashee Rice is phenomenal. The red zone offense is an issue. They've got to get
feels that. Like it's been an
they've
issue.
They've got forever, to get though. That figured out. They've not been able to get the ball in the end zone consistently when they've been inside the 20. So, I mean, yeah, like I'm not going to go as far as you as far as the offense. It's been okay. I've been okay with it. They've got to get that red zone stuff figured out.
That's a Kelce thing, I think. I'd like to see that better, but it doesn't. I'm higher on their defense than I thought I would be, which takes that pressure off when you have Butker. It's almost like last year when it was like their defense is so good and they've got this kicker who just makes everything that it's a little bit of that. And it can certainly get better. Just what I mean is it doesn't concern me because of those two things. Like as they figure it out, there's just not a lot of urgency. This formula that they're playing with right now, it's the same formula they won a Super Bowl with a year ago. Like as long as they get there and you get to the postseason and you see this style of play, you've got a kicker who makes everything, you've got a defense who makes stops, and you've got a team that's committed to running the ball with Mahomes right in a final drive. Like that, all of those things are there. And I didn't know that they would because I didn't think the defense would be that good. And so the fact that it is, I'm just like, okay, Mahomes has thrown a couple interceptions. Like that's fine. And I wouldn't feel any different, if they were 2-1 or whatever. It just, the formula looks like it's going to be the formula, and it didn't really change from last year when I thought it would. Here they go. They're 3-0. They could easily be 0-3. They're not. That's what happens when you have Mahomes and Butker and Andy Reid. I mean, basically, right? Like that's how you win those games on these razor thin margins. And look across the league. How many teams really feel great about everything, right? Like not very many. And they're 3. I think it's so funny that they're 3-0 and they haven't even played close to their best football.
They haven't. And my point on that, and I mentioned this earlier in the hour, is that eventually they're going to have to. Eventually they're going to have to. I know we can revert back to, look, they won a Super Bowl this way a year ago, but it was made pretty clear by just about everybody that they didn't like the way that it went last year. Now they won a Super Bowl.
They don't have the penalties and the drops and the mistakes they had last year.
But as far as having a super efficient offense, that was something that was, I think the mentality going into this year was, everybody, we have improved this. It's going to be significantly better. In a lot of ways, it has been. Don't get me wrong. You mentioned the penalties and the drops. Those things are not, rearing their ugly head quite like we saw a season ago. But there have been plenty of times where the offense has stalled out through the first three games, where they've had the chances to, like in the Falcons game, I know that there was an opportunity where they could have put Atlanta away in the fourth quarter, and they didn't. By the way, I don't know if you caught this or not. In the fourth quarter of the Sunday night game, the Chiefs couldn't muster a first down. They didn't get a first down in the entire fourth quarter of that game on Sunday night. Can the Chiefs win a championship with the kind of offense that they've shown through 3 weeks? Yes, because they did it a year ago. Do they want to do it that way? Absolutely not.
I mean, every team wants to score more points. I think they're comfortable with it. It reminds me of a Patriots team.
I don't think they
are,
but that's okay. They can still win that way. They can still win while being uncomfortable. But if last season and the way that things went down with the interactions on the sidelines and in the locker room, like all those different things, they were uncomfortable with the way they were playing football. They won a championship. They can do it again. They're not going to be comfortable doing it that way.
They can be, what I'm saying is they can be more efficient, score more points. Of course they can, and they should. Because they could not be 3-0 very easily. My thing is, I think they're comfortable getting ugly in a game and winning it through time of possession, through having one of the great quarterbacks of all time have the ball in the fourth quarter. And I know that didn't work out that way very well in Atlanta, but typically it does. It reminds me of some of those Patriot teams where during the year you're like, man, how do they just keep winning these games? Like, what is it?
And look,
I think that's their brand this year.
I know that you have mentioned a couple of different times about the plan or the goal is to get the ball back in the hands of 15 to go and win a game if they need to. I mean, I'm thinking back all three of the games, that was not the way that it ended up. Right. I mean, the Ravens had the ball to end the game to go and, you know, potentially tie or win. The Bengals had the ball. It took pass interference, you know, for the, you know, basically for all of that to fall apart for them. And then, you know, on Sunday night against the Falcons had the ball with a chance to go win the game. So if that's the game plan, and I don't disagree that it is, they'd like to be the last team with the ball and put it in the hands of Mahomes. It really hasn't worked out that way so far.
Yeah, I disagree. I think they've gone and won games that way, but I mean, maybe not
this year.
Yeah, not to the literal sense that they had the ball last, but they went and took games in the fourth quarter, and did they Atlanta? They could have been better on offense. It's not perfect. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm just saying.
Well, I'm just curious. When did they go and take a game from somebody in the fourth quarter? Because that hasn't happened in three games.
How did they win the game against Cincinnati?
They it took a pass interference call from Cincinnati to
a winning field goal.
Right. It took a pass interference penalty for a drive to be extended for Kansas City to get into that opportunity to win the game. They didn't go and take that game. It wasn't like they marched down the field and got it into the end zone to win the game. That's not the way that the game ended up. That's not the way any of the games have ended up so far. So right. I'm just curious on the mentality of they've gone and taken games this season. They haven't.
We'll get into it this week. I think they're very comfortable is my point with the way these games are playing out, where I was totally wrong and thought they wanted to be high flying this year. I don't think they want to be that at all.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Happy Tuesday to you on Sports Daily. Jacob Albrecht back in after a few days off alongside Tommy Kester, Jad Chambers. In studio producing for us, Manning, our IHOP hotline. Glad to be with you. Glad to give you that IHOP hotline to get in touch with us at 869-1240. You can also get in touch with us on our video streams. You can find us on 12 News Plus Connected. You can find us on Facebook, YouTube, and X. Lots of different ways for you to get in touch with the program. We will have a giveaway for you today as well. Here we go. It's a Tuesday. A doubleheader Monday Night Football in the books. I'm in on the doubleheader Monday Night Footballs, by the way. I think it's a good idea. I think they should keep doing it. But we're here. Royals back in action today. Tommy, I know Royals fans are pretty nervous right now. I'm nervous for them. But we've got that to talk about. Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman, will join us bottom of this hour to break it down, a Royals insider. We'll also have our Chiefs insider, Dan Israel, to get us through the Chiefs talk today. My apologies. It's Max, who you're going to talk to if you call that IHOP hotline, Max Power. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Man, I'm good. It's good to see you today. I hope that you're rested and you're obviously back home. I know that it's been a long few days for you, but glad to have you back on the show. Glad that we're back together, reunited. It feels so good, and looking forward to getting into it.
A five-state journey a couple of times in just a handful of days, but it was good. It was good. I had some family time, got some things taken care of, and here we go right into the thick of things as the home stretch for the Royals is going to be chaotic. We'll get into that with Mike in a few minutes. Your thoughts there, of course. But let's talk a little football. Monday Night Football, two games that sort of had, you know, things to pay attention to, not just because we generally watch whatever the NFL feeds us, but these had implications to some degree to what the Chiefs are doing here, Tommy, as you've got, you know, the two biggest contenders, no offense to the Ravens last year, but generally speaking, it's sort of the Ravens and then the Bills and the Bengals every year with the Chiefs. The Chiefs, of course, have had the better of the Bills always in the playoffs. The Bengals have had better luck against the Chiefs in the playoffs. The Bengals now, though, 0-3, the Bills 3-0. And Tommy, I would tell you, like, all the talk in the offseason was the Bills are going to take a major step back without Steph Diggs, without Gabe Davis. Who's Josh Allen going to throw the ball to? That window is closing. I heard plenty of times. I didn't subscribe to that. And then the Bengals, I did subscribe to being one of the real contenders. They're now 0-3. I don't know if I'm ready to take them off the contender list. In fact, I do know I'm not ready to take them off the contender list. That was a team that darn near beat the Chiefs. But man, I don't know what to make of that one more on the Bengals, or that Jaden Daniels looks just incredible. The Washington offense with Cliff Kingsbury has basically scored on every drive for 2 weeks now, but pretty impressive stuff from them last night. But do you still view both of these teams, you know, by the time we get to January, as contenders for the Super Bowl against the Chiefs?
No, I don't. I mean, I think that the Bengals have basically played their way out of that, in my opinion. You know, you're 0-3, and I get that they've got a tremendous amount of talent, and we all know what the Bengals can do, but their defense is abysmal. It's not good whatsoever, and it really hasn't been through the first 3 weeks of the season. And I think that, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you are what your record says that you are. And they're 0-3. You know, they're going to win some games, don't get me wrong, but they've dug themselves a hole that is really difficult historically for teams to get out of if they want to make the playoffs. There are not very many teams in the NFL, you know, going back decades, that have started a season 0-3 that have ultimately become a playoff team. Can the Bengals do it? Sure, because, yeah, you've got Joe Burrow and you've got your weapons and you've got all of that. But, man, I'm not convinced from what I've seen out of the Bengals. I know they played the Chiefs close, and I know that, you know, they always play the Chiefs close. I mean, we know that going back the last four or five times those teams matched up, that it's a field goal game, you know, and in a lot of cases, like it was last week, even closer than that. But, you know, they lose to the Patriots. They lose to the Commanders last night. Neither one of those teams, I think, were very high up on people's radar as far as being, you know, legitimate NFL teams this season. So, no, I'm out on the Bengals. I think that they will win some games, but I don't think that because of the way that they've started this season that they can dig themselves out of this hole and become a playoff team. On the other side of it, the Bills, I'm bought in on, and I wasn't at the beginning of the season. I didn't subscribe. I know you mentioned that people were saying the window was closed. I wasn't buying into that necessarily. I didn't subscribe to that, but I did think that there was going to be some rebuilding. I mean, look, they basically replaced everybody on that, you know, offense except for Josh Allen. And I know that obviously James Cook is somebody that's been around and has been effective for them, but at least from, you know, the receiving point of view, they basically rebuilt that entire wide receiver room. And I was of the impression that it was going to take a little bit of time for that to get rebuilt, and it took quicker than I thought it would. That was extremely impressive the way that they were able to have that offensive onslaught last night.
I think for me, the biggest reason, and I probably said this with the picks because I still picked them to win the East, was that their receiving core wasn't as decimated maybe as we thought, if you like Khalil Shakir, and I do, because they have two tight ends there that they were going to use. It honestly, it reminds me a little bit of how the Chiefs reinvented themselves offensively post Tyreek Hill. You still got the great quarterback. There's still pieces there. And James Cook was awesome last year, and he didn't go anywhere. And so they just sort of reinvented what they were on offense, but they're still Josh Allen. Their defense has been ahead of schedule probably as much as anything. So I'm not terribly surprised, but, you know, I am a little surprised they've been this dominant this early. Tip of the hat to Josh Allen and the coaching staff. They're very for real, and they look really good. The Bengals do this all the time. The last 2 years, I think they've been 1-2 to open the season. And then they just sort of catch fire late in a year, and they've been doing that for a while. They've just never been as good in the regular season as they probably should be in this era. Now, in 22, they did finish really strong, but they do this. They stumble out of the gates all the time, and all of this was riding. All right, Joe Burrow's back, and, you know, here we go. It was a defense that let him down, obviously, last night, and – you know, against the Chiefs, it was a couple of mistakes that let them down, but that was a game. I think if you're the Bengals in that game, you feel like you should have won it. I don't know about last night. In the first week, I didn't watch a second of that game, so I don't have a strong opinion on the Patriots game, but I know they were good enough to almost get the Chiefs in Arrowhead. So as they come up on a schedule where they'll play Carolina, you know, they do have a tough one against Baltimore, but the Giants, Cleveland's mixed in there. The Raiders are mixed in there. They're going to start to pile up some wins. I would still consider them a contender because I think they have way too many good players not to be. You know, when T. Higgins is fully healthy, I don't know how much they'll miss Joe Mixon, but if their defense doesn't play better, then I'd be concerned. I don't recall watching the Chiefs game, Tommy, and thinking, oh man, this is a terrible defense. You know what I mean? Last night they looked terrible, but I don't think we had that feeling in the Chiefs game. So we'll see on them. They've still got Burrow. I'm not counting them out.
And to your point, they have stumbled out of the gate in years past, but the difference is they've never started 0-3 in the Joe Burrow right. era.
They've been 1-2.
They've been 1-2. At one point they were 0-2-1. But they've not started 0-3 at any point in the Joe Burrow era. So this is, you know, uncharted territory a little bit for the Bengals. Do they have the opportunity to turn it around? Absolutely. And it starts with a Carolina team that, yeah, by the way, Andy Dalton just came in and, you know, made the Panthers look really good on Sunday. So that
felt so stupid.
It's ridiculous. So who knows what'll happen there. And I don't think anybody thought that the Patriots in week one would beat the Bengals. So who knows with the Panthers, but just going on their game by game schedule moving forward, I mean, there are, yeah, they've got winnable games coming up at Carolina. They're at the Giants. They're at the Browns. But if you go even further down, I mean, watching the way that this Bengals team has played through 3 weeks, it wouldn't surprise me if they're 4-6 through their first 10 games. You know, if that, and that's kind of like on the upside. I mean, they'd be over 500 in their next seven to get to 4-6. They could do it for sure. I'm just not counting on it.
Well, the good news for them is Baltimore has struggled out of the gates. Cleveland has struggled out of the gates. Indianapolis has struggled out of the gates. Jacksonville's a total non-factor. Miami struggled out of the gates. So as I look at it, yeah, I'll put the Chiefs in Buffalo and Pittsburgh ahead of them. I'll even give you Houston after their loss. That's still putting them in that 5-6-7 range, and they feel like a chip in a chair kind of a team in the postseason to me. Like, if I'm the Chiefs, I don't want to see the Bengals in the postseason. Not the way that those games have gone historically. And I think it's a far cry to say the Bengals wouldn't be in the top seven teams in the AFC to reach the postseason. They've got to figure some things out. They obviously have to win games, but I think clearly they're one of the top seven teams in the AFC, even at 0-3, when you look at collectively what everybody's done. And we'll just, but again, they've got to win the games. They've got experience doing that late in the season. So we'll see it there, but it's, you know, you like it. If you're the Chiefs, you'd love to not see the Bengals in the postseason. You'd love to see somebody else get in there. The Jaguars are a total mess. I don't think there's even much. They've become a completely uninteresting team to me. The Commanders, however, have become a really interesting team. Jaden Daniels looks fantastic. His accuracy jumps off the screen at you. The zip on his balls jumps off the screen, and obviously we knew he was a runner. If he can, and they talked about it a lot last night, if he can figure out a way to preserve his body and stay healthy, which right now I would say he's not doing a tremendous job of, but it's not the worst that we've seen. He's got a chance to be really, really special. And everyone's saying, oh, did the Bears get it wrong? Did the Bears get it wrong? I don't know, because I think Caleb Williams has looked fine too, pretty good. So I don't think that that's necessarily the case. I just think it's a case where both of those guys look like they're going to be good quarterbacks. Man, Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury appears to be the absolute perfect fit, because you look across the field on there, like, they've got Terry McLaurin, Brian Robinson's all right, De'Ami Brown. Like, they're getting it done with some dudes that people didn't give them a lot of credit for. They're a dangerous team. I don't like any team in the NFC East more than them definitively. I mean, I just, like, not the way they've been playing on offense. Their defense isn't very good, but their offense is looking great.
Yeah, it was kind of a revelation, I think, last night, and kind of a coming out party on the big stage on Monday Night Football at the NFL level for Jaden Daniels. I've been a big Jaden Daniels fan for a long time, and I felt like whatever team brought him in, if they would let him be Jaden Daniels, if they could unlock him a little bit and just kind of let him run wild, then at that point, that's where you get to see some of those spectacular plays. That one play, when you combine the arm strength of Jaden Daniels and the speed of Terry McLaurin, that long touchdown pass was just, it was incredible. And the fact that he beat the coverage and just, it was kind of a flick of the wrist, and Daniels was able to put that perfectly in the breadbasket of McLaurin. It's like, man, like that is potentially going to be a connection that we see for a long time. A lot of people have loved Terry McLaurin for years. And it wasn't that I never saw it. I just never believed that he could do it consistently because he never had a quarterback that I felt like could get him the ball consistently. And after seeing what he's been able to do and that connection that he's formed with Jaden Daniels, I'm looking forward to watching that for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's had 1,000 yards basically every year of his career. His first year.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's been really good with terrible quarterbacks. But yeah. For instance, in fantasy drafts and things like that, I'm kind of like, yeah, he's got a ton of talent and he's going to put up yards. But, you know, historically, at least in his career, he's played with bad quarterbacks.
I mean, Daniels, as good as he was, he missed McLaurin twice on potential touchdowns.
Yeah.
Like that's going to only grow. Like they're good and their defense sucks, but so they're probably not a real contender with that defense, but man,
they could make it interesting. They could absolutely
Watching Jaden Daniels play.
The Cowboys are pretenders. The Eagles, in my opinion, are completely underwhelming with the amount of talent they have on that roster. I know they beat the Saints, but I'm not impressed with the Eagles whatsoever, except for Saquon Barkley. If you know, that's the only thing in my mind that's the saving grace right now for the Eagles, and then the Giants are the
Giants.
They'll
get A.J. Brown back. They're pretty good, I think. The Cowboys are not. The Commanders are right there with either one of those teams, at least on an individual game-to-game basis. It's good Monday Night Football. It's good to see these young quarterbacks survive. In a year and years now, going plural, where quarterback play has really been suppressed because of this two-deep safety thing, it's fun to see good quarterback play. And you saw two great quarterbacks in that game last night. I mean, man, they looked good. Trevor Lawrence was the worst quarterback of the four teams, not even close, of the four we saw last night. He is average at best, it would appear, at this point in his career, which is too bad for all the accolades and everything he had coming into it. But just a quick Monday Night Football recap there. I don't think there's anything else out of those games to take. Are you with the two Monday Night Football game situation we have here?
Yeah, 100%.
I think it's great.
If they could, and it, at least the way that I see it, is take away Thursday Night Football and move that game into a doubleheader every week on Monday night. I don't think you need Thursday Night Football. There are so many different reasons why that shouldn't be a primetime game on Thursday nights, but I love the thought. I love the idea of just having double headers every single Monday night. And I like the staggering too. I like having one start about an hour to hour and a half before the other one. And then you kind of have, you know, a whole evening of football. I'm definitely on board with that.
I don't like it when I miss my opportunity to make a bet because I was taking James Cook first touchdown, but we couldn't get across the Kansas border fast enough on our drive home last night. I got the other one. I got the Jamar Chase one, but I was so mad. I was just like, I didn't even realize it started at 6:30. I'm going in to put him like, why can't I put this in? I didn't even realize it happened. I was like, you got to be kidding me. But, you know, whatever. Nobody cares about that. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll sort of gear you up for the Royals here. And then we'll bring in Mike Gillespie later in the hour as well. You'll hear the Royals, by the way, on the Odyssey app. You can hear us on the Odyssey app as well, odyssey.com. Just download the app, search for KFH to get started. You can also leave us voicemails there, which is kind of fun. You can do that and send those to us. You just go there, there's a little microphone, and you can do that. But we'll talk a little Royals next when we return. It's Jacob Albrock. This is Tommy Caster. It's a Tuesday on Sports Daily. Don't go away.
Cullen Huck's power washing is like getting to the top of Mount Everest with only a bag of beef jerky and a soda. Huck's can conquer all residential or commercial exterior cleaning woes that you have, leaving you feeling like you're on top of the world. House washing, window cleaning, driveway.
talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. I want to tell you about Pep and Suter Remodeling here. These are the guys that did, we did a summer remodel. We did the kitchen. We did a little office work and a little bit in the basement. And we couldn't be happier with the work that was done, honestly. You know, we didn't know what to expect. Even if we've had questions after the job is done, everything's paid for, I can give Pep a call. He walks me through it, answers those questions, checks on things. But, you know, I've said this before, we had by far the best bid, by far, not even close. And then a customer service level that, you know, I've built two businesses, and customer service is everything when you're dealing with contractors. And as far as this project, it could not have been better. They were so gracious to give us as much access as they could while they did this. We didn't feel nearly as left out of being able to use our kitchen as some people do during those remodels where they can't use it. So can't recommend them enough. Give Pepin a call, 316-573-6822. That's 316-573-6822 for all your home remodeling needs. Pepin Suter Contracting, they did a great job, and we were happy to have them as supporters of the program. All right, Tommy, it is Royals baseball season. And the Royals are struggling. I saw in Ted's update the chances that all the, you know, the guessing services put it at about 60%. And well, I would guess that if we polled Royals fans, they wouldn't tell you they're feeling about 60% good right now. We bring in Mike Gillespie from Kings of Kaufman here. Mike, I don't know. I think Royals fans are probably feeling like it looks more about like 6% the way things have been going. It's, of course, not quite that bad, but my goodness, what a disaster of a week it was.
Well, you're right. You know, when I was with you a week ago, we were talking about, you know, maybe on the show today, we'd be talking about a playoff spot. We're talking about a playoff spot, but not quite the way we expected it. But, you know, that's what happens when a contending team just, you know, gets home for its final homestand and drops six games and seven in a row.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Mike. I mean, clearly, offensively, the I guess you can call it anemic bats for the Royals over the last week or so. And really, the offense has not been particularly good in the month of September in general. But really, that's been on full display over the last week. I saw a stat that was referencing Vinny Pasquantino going on the IL. And the Royals have really struggled with runners in scoring position. And I saw this stat that from the beginning of the season until August 30th, when Pasquantino was put on the IL, that the Royals were hitting like .295 with runners in scoring position collectively. Once Pasquantino went on the IL on August 30th, ever since that time, they've been batting around the Mendoza line with runners in scoring position. And so obviously, having the loss of Pasquantino in the lineup to drive in runs, we're seeing that happen game after game after game, where we've seen players get on base. We just have had an issue with getting those players in and scoring runs.
Well, that, you know, that's exactly right. And you know, I think it's a lot of people, I think it's been easy for them to say, well, when Vinny went down, the whole lineup went down. What a lot of people forget is about the time Vinny went on the IL, Witt went into a slump. I mean, he really did. He's coming out of it now. And at the same time, even though Perez was getting some key hits, I think it's fair to say that he's starting to press some. He's chasing that low and away pitch again. So it's more than Pasquantino. I mean, it's top to bottom. There isn't a hitter other than Witt right now who looks like they're not in a slump.
This has been a streaky team all year long. That part shouldn't surprise us. And I like to be an optimist, especially when things look this dire, as much as you can be. That streaking the other way could be timing out perfectly. Like if this stays a streaky team and they can get it turned around, obviously, to get there and that times into the playoffs, they're going to be a really hard team to beat. But it is very hard to look at it that way now, seven losses in a row with all of these teams now back in the mix for these. You've got four teams, maybe five, but unlikely, but at least four playing for these two spots. You've got a series against the Nationals here. They have to win these games against the Nationals. We don't want to come into this thing with their backs against the wall even further, taking on the Braves in Atlanta.
No, I agree. And I remember when we kind of talked about these things last week, I talked about how I was kind of nervous about the Giants series because it seemed to me like it might be setting up as a trap series. The same thing with going to the going to Washington. They don't have the best pitching, but you know, Washington is a team with absolutely nothing to lose. They're 18 games under 500, and they're putting a target on the Royals' backs for the next three nights. I really think that's dangerous. Then you go to Atlanta, where right now, you know, almost the biggest series in baseball is what the Braves are doing for the next 3 days, playing the Mets, only two games behind them. And if the Braves win or sweep that series, they're going to be awfully hungry when the Royals get there Friday. So there are no games to overlook in the next six, none.
Yeah. So Mike, a little bit about me. I'm a Braves fan, grew up a Braves fan, obviously, you know, cheer on the Royals too, but I actually, for the Royals' benefit, I hope the Mets, you know, are able to take two of three or maybe even sweep the Braves for the Royals, because at that point the Braves are going to be out of the wild card mix and they're not going to have quite as much to play for. They're getting up for this series against the Mets this week. And then, you know, maybe by the time the weekend rolls around, you know, it won't be quite as crucial for the Braves, at least in that matchup against Kansas City. But as you mentioned, if Atlanta is able to take a couple, you know, from New York in this next to last series for them, then at that point, you're talking about two teams in the final regular season matchup, final regular season series that will both be battling for wild card spots, for playoff spots with the final couple of games left. And it could be a really, really tough matchup to your point. So obviously the Royals are now in a position where, yeah, you can only control what you can control, but you're certainly crossing your fingers that a few other things happen, especially with your own wild card race in the American League.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, if you hear any of the Royals in the next couple of days saying, "Hey, we're not watching any other teams except the one we're playing," you know, we're not paying any attention to any other teams. Yeah, they are. They yeah. really are, because they know they need a little sure bit of help right now.
I mean, you just the missed opportunity came this weekend, because now you get it where you've got the Twins get to play the Marlins here. You know, the Mariners against the Astros may help, maybe, but the Astros have that thing locked up as far as the division goes. I just, if the magic number's at six and you only play six games, there's no way we can imagine the Royals winning all six here. Of course they could, but if you don't get at least two or three against Washington, I don't know how much help they're going to get from the other teams to shrink that number. That's the problem I see now, is even with like the Twins struggling, they get to play the Marlins here down the stretch. I think Detroit gets the Rays and the White Sox. I mean, it's just, the other side of the magic number doesn't look as helpful as it did this time last week.
No, definitely not. And you know, when I was a few days ago looking at the last week schedule, the thing that stood out to me most was, oh my, look what the Tigers end with. Three at home with the White Sox. Yeah. I mean, that's not good. And it's not good for the Royals. It's great for the Tigers. But yeah, this, you know, when they went to this format several years ago on Sunday, the last day of the season, everybody starts at exactly the same time. You know, it hadn't worked out all that well for a few years. The races are usually decided, but this weekend, you know, Sunday's going to mean something. unless, as you say, the Royals reel off five in a row going into Sunday. But yeah, it's exciting stuff.
Are you concerned, Mike? I know there's a lot to be concerned about right now going into the final week of the regular season, but we've talked about the lack of offense from Kansas City. I was at the game on Saturday against the Giants when the Giants put up 9 against Kansas City, and you know, Brady Singer had a rough outing. It seemed like, you know, every time I looked up, oh, there's another home run, you know, going out right there. You know, Matt Chapman's going to hit another one, you know, for the Giants. Are you concerned about at least, you know, maybe specifically Brady Singer or just the rotation in general? There's been so much focus put on the lack of offense. Are we still seeing some issues there with starting pitching?
Yeah. And, you know, if you look at everybody's projections on the Royals' probable starters in Washington, note that tomorrow is to be determined. There's only one reason for that, and that's Lorenzen.
Yeah,
they think he's about ready to come off the IL. And the question, I think, for Cotrero is if Lorenzen comes back and is ready to come back now, does he slot Lorenzen in instead of Marsh on Wednesday in Washington, or does he let Marsh take the mound and slot Lorenzen in Friday night in Singer's slot? And if I were Cotrero, I'd be awfully tempted to hold him off till Friday, and to at least have him standing by ready to go if Marsh gets in trouble tomorrow, because, you know, Singer has a history of slowing down late in the year. And right now, I think when it gets right down to it, he's the shakiest guy in that rotation.
Isn't Marsh, is it the first and the fourth that Marsh has been bad in all year? I think it's the first at least. They've got some options because you could use Marsh as an emergency either day too, yeah. I suppose. You know, if you wanted to go Lorenzen and Singer and then just have Marsh ready to roll. It's the offense for me. You go into Washington and score a ton of runs like that's you're going to be, when they get this series, they're in a pitcher with an ERA below 4.30 that's going to start any of these games for Washington. It's time to make this not about the pitching. Like, can you go score 6-7 runs a couple of times and reopen this? I think the hard part is, I don't know if it's just a cold streak or if this offense just isn't really capable of that, sustaining that without Vinny Pasquantino. I mean, I think that they are, but they feel like they're pressing, and I don't know if a day off can help. But do you get any sense in the clubhouse? Does this seem like a team? It does from the outside that would be equipped to just sort of push this to the side and start over a little bit, but that's easier said than done. And they've obviously never faced a test like this.
No, that's true. And, you know, I think it's one thing that's important to remember about the makeup of this team is they've got some veterans who've been in these situations before. They've fought for postseason spots. They've played in the postseason, but they're also relying on a lot of guys who've never been there. And I think there'll be some natural pressing, but something needs to happen to shake them up. Maybe a team meeting, which I don't know is that big a deal. Some people think that Cotrero ought to just go out on the field, find a reason to throw a fit, get kicked out, and make a big display. Or maybe they need a fight, something like that. But I don't think any of that's going to help. I think they just need to hit. And if I were Matt Cotrero, if I've got anybody getting on base who can run, I'm going to start running. They've got to make something happen, and that's one way they can do it. And they've got people who can run.
Yeah, and I think following up on that, Mike, I mean, having kind of a spark starting from somewhere, that's got to be essential for Kansas City. And in a lot of cases, it does start with the manager. And, you know, hearing Cotrero talk after the finale against the Giants on Sunday, and then hearing about, and I read a story over the weekend about what the Royals clubhouse is currently like right now after this losing streak in the homestand and how bad it was. Cotrero, you know, sounded fairly dejected in his postgame presser on Sunday in that finale. Rightfully so. It's been, you know, such a disaster lately. But It was kind of painted a grim picture a little bit. He sounded frustrated. He sounded dejected a little bit. You know, that sort of thing carries over into the clubhouse, obviously, and it sounds like that's kind of been the case right now. In your mind, with Matt Cutrero in this final week of the regular season, I know both of these things are important, so don't get me wrong, but in your mind, what's more important for Matt Cutrero? Is it more important to try to get the clubhouse back together and try to find a way to have that spark? Or is it more important that the strategy, you know, whether that is figuring out the rotation or getting guys on base to steal bases, what's more important to you that Cutrero does well this final week of the regular season?
Well, Cutrero is going to do what Cutrero is going to do. And what I mean by that, take for example, the Washington starters this week. They're all left-handers. And Cutrero kind of gets tempted to bench MJ and Isbell and Massey when that happens. Well, I'm leaving Massey in the lineup. That's one thing he can do. But I do think it'd be great if he could find some way to start, as you call, that spark. Because, you know, he's usually calm, cool, and collected. But, you know, what you're talking about on Sunday, I think, is when he said after the game something along the lines of, you can't accurately describe the level of frustration in this clubhouse. That's really unlike him. So, you know, something's wrong.
That's not good. That's not good. Well, we'll see. Look, tonight it's advantage Royals. It's Reagan's on the mound. They have the pitching advantage. It's a team that has not been good this year. At some point, they got to just go win games. I mean, that's what it comes down to. You could just basically say the postseason starts now. I mean, if you want to look at it that way, you get an extra week, Royals fans, of postseason baseball. How about we'll spin it that way?
Yeah,
but it's going to be crazy. What do you guys have going at Kings of Coffin for us, Mike?
Well, quite a bit. It's I had a story up this morning. Just kind of a news roundup, and talked some about the potential return of Lorenzen. One of our new guys has a story up right now about the longest playoff droughts in Royals history, which is good. And of course, we'll be jumping all over each game. One thing I would be remiss if I didn't say, you know, people have been talking about the Royals altering their rotation to get ready for a wild card series. If they follow the rotation the way it's set, and it comes down to the weekend, I mentioned Singer would be next up for Friday, but look at Saturday and Sunday. We're talking Seth Lugo on Saturday and Cole Reagans on Sunday. I feel good about that, if that's what we come down to. So I don't want to see Cutrero tinker with the rotation just for the playoffs. He's got to get there first.
Yeah, for sure. That would be get no days off now, right? There's no way to skip a start. I don't think you do that either. So I'm with you there. All right. Follow Mike on social media. Kings of Coffin all covered for us. We'll all hold our breath for the next week. Here we go, Royals baseball. Get some help on the other side of it, too. Man, if you could get wins or losses on the other side are just as good at this point. Mike, we appreciate it. Thanks for hopping on.
Yep, thanks, guys.
There goes our Royals insider, Mike Gillespie. You love and hate this, don't you? I mean, you hate that it's come on this 7-game losing streak, Tommy, but you love that this last week of baseball feels this way. You know, I guess it could have just as easy they could be on a 7-game win streak to be in the position they're in. Like you really have to just retrain your brain and start it over. I'm glad they had a day off yesterday. Yikes. I don't know.
Yeah. I read an article yesterday, I believe, or maybe it was on Sunday, about how the Royals players, like, obviously frustration abounds in the clubhouse, but also they're packing to go on this road trip. And they don't know how long they're going to be gone. You know, if they make the playoffs, there's a wild card round. They're going to be on the road for the wild card round. They're not going to be the first team, you know, or the home team in the wild card series. So they don't know they're packing like, are we going to be gone for a week, longer than a week? We don't really know. And that's kind of an uncertain, you know, place to be. And really, they've played their way into this position where, honestly, they've got nobody to blame but themselves.
Yeah, we pack, just reuse your underwear. Like, come on now. Like, that, let's not worry about that, Royals. Like, let's worry about, you know, scoring a few runs. Man, what? Let's make our stand. We've had the day off. There's six games to go. Will the Royals make the postseason? Tom and I'll give you we'll make our stand. We'll give you our thoughts on that when we return. The IHOP hotline is back open at 869-1240. Your video comments welcome as well on some of the video streams. We've got Chiefs insider Dan Israel coming up top of next hour. We'll dig in to the Kansas City Chiefs, but we'll finish this hour with some Royals talk. Tommy, let's make our stand. Six games to go. Royals right now sit tied with Detroit for the second wild card spot. They are a game ahead of Minnesota. They are a game and a half ahead of Seattle. Will the Kansas City Royals reach the postseason in 2024? Can't believe we're asking this question, but we're going to do it. I'll go first. I think they will. I think that starting pitching in general terms has been too good. And I think eventually they'll score some runs. And even if they don't score some runs, maybe they can get a win in a 3-2 game instead of losing a 3-2 game. But I think they'll get enough. They need a combination of six things. There's enough teams that could potentially lose games to help them. I'll say yes by the skin of their teeth.
I'm going to say no by the skin of their teeth. I'm going to go the opposite direction. As much as I desperately want them to, there's been nothing in the last week plus that has indicated to me that they are going to turn it around and figure it out. And we know this team has been streaky all season long. Streaky is one thing. Slumping is another thing. And they've been slumping significantly, especially with the bats. So that's a concern for me. There really has not been, I think I used the word spark with Mike Gillespie in our last segment. There's been no spark. And that can change. That can change very quickly. And teams do it all the time. But really, I've been searching and searching and searching for some kind of indication that they've got that spark, at least offensively, and there's nothing right now. So I'm going to say no by the skin of their teeth.
So here's the other thing for me that leans me that way is the Twins haven't been playing very well either. The Mariners got a game and a half to make up, and they got to play this Houston series. Their schedule is a little bit more difficult. I don't think they'll hold off the Tigers, but I think they'll hold off the other two. It's going to be tough. It is going to be tough. The problem for the Mariners is they're starting to play well. But that's it. All right, there you go. Game one tonight. We'll get you the viewing, listening details in just a little bit. When we return, we'll switch over to the Kansas City Chiefs, 3-0. It's been an interesting 3-0, but they're 3-0. Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network and our Chiefs Insider, joins us next on Sports Daily. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH. We can continue that Chiefs discussion. We just ran out of time, but it's an interesting one on the 3-0 start. We'll do that later this week. We have all kinds of fun stuff. Kevin Saul joins us tomorrow. We'll have Shreyas Lada stopping by to talk about the disaster that's been the KU football season. That's all coming. Coming up tonight, you've got the Chiefs Kingdom show at 5 o'clock here on KFH, and then Royals Nationals coverage begins at 6 o'clock right here on KFH as well. The Royals have got to get it done. We'll be back here to talk about that tomorrow as well. For Max Power, for Tommy Caster, are we not at the last segment?
No, we've got a couple of minutes left, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about what's on the network.
Goodness gracious.
You have been gone for a while.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good. My apologies, everybody. That's not good, Al. Look, let's spend just a second. We might have a minute. My thing with the Chiefs and their comfort level with the way things are going so far, I just think they're very in their element and comfortable when games are coming down to the wire. Now, is there room to improve? Of course there is. They could be 0-3 right now. But as far as like short intermediate pass game, let games play into their defense, let just the things that made them win games in the postseason, it just feels like that is totally bled right into this year as far as stylistically the way that they want to play games this year. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, I think that from an identity perspective, you're right that that's what it is. That's what their identity is, realistically. I disagree with you that that's the way they want to play. I think it's the way they have to play.
And you know, they'd like to win every game 40 to nothing.
From a comfortability standpoint, I think that's probably where you and I disagree. I think that there would be some different ways they would like to deploy their weapons, but you know, you have to give what the defense, you know, take what the defense gives you, I guess.
Yeah, defenses aren't going to let them go over the top. I mean, they're just not. They haven't for 2 years, and it really probably 3 out of 4 years. They're just something. And what I'm curious about is if defenses switch that up, right? Do you take away the short to intermediate stuff and make the Chiefs go over the top? Maybe it's worth a shot. I don't know, but we'll see. And we'll pay attention to that, of course.